Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Hello there and good morning. Coming up on today's show, they finally did it. After 32 years together, the Pogues frontman Shane McGowan and Victoria Mary Clark got married during the week. We'll be chatting to them both. Also today, we hear the inspirational story of a remarkable 42-year-old man who gave up life as a high-flying lawyer in Dublin to set up an inner-city project for disadvantaged children, became a Church of Ireland deacon, and is now terminally ill with cancer. Our text number today, 51551. You can email Miriam at rt.ie and you can find me on Twitter at Miriam O'Cal. Well, first up, it's competition time and we've got a pair of tickets for you to go and see The Greatest Showman. Hugh Jackman, Oscar-nominated Golden Globe and Tony Award-winning performer, has just announced his first ever world tour that includes a Dublin date of May the 30th next year at the Three Arena. Well, tickets go on sale this coming Friday at 9 a.m. But before that happens, we're giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to his concert, where you'll hear Hugh with a full orchestra perform songs from The Greatest Showman, Les Miserables and many, many more. Well, for your chance this morning to win those tickets, just answer this simple question. Can you name the character played by Hugh Jackman in the Marvel X-Men movies? Is it Wolverine or Iron Man? Well, text your answer, Wolverine or Iron Man, and your name to 51551 and we'll announce the winner before the end of today's show. Now this morning, I'm joined in our studio by a remarkable man, Graham Jones. He gave up a high-powered corporate law job to set up an inner-city project for disadvantaged children in the Liberties area here in Dublin. Called the Solace Project, it provides after-school clubs, mentoring schemes and two inner-city rugby clubs with one in St Patrick's Detention Centre. Graham is a man of deep faith. 2 years ago, he began training to be a priest in the Church of Ireland, and just 2 weeks ago, he was ordained a deacon. But it was also 2 years ago when Graham was first diagnosed with cancer. At first, treatment worked, but sadly, his cancer has spread to his brain, and he's now terminally ill. All treatment has been stopped. He's left hospital and he's receiving palliative care treatment in his home. Well, joining Graham today is his wife Louise, mother to their three young daughters, and his brother and best friend, the Reverend Rob Jones, who is a Church of Ireland priest in Rathmines. Good morning to you all, Louise, Graham and Rob.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. First of all, Graham and Rob, tell me about yourselves, where you grew up and your family. I'll start with you, Graham.
Yeah, thanks. A Dublin boy, born and reared in Rathfarnham, one of five siblings, privileged to be able to say come from a loving family. Yeah, here we are.
What order do you come in? Where do you come and where does Rob come?
I am the second youngest.
Okay.
And then Rob is one above in the middle.
And growing up, Rob, I know you're really close now. Were you close growing up?
It's a good question.
It is a good question.
There was definitely a season of brothers so close in age. Rivalry was a big thing. We were close, but definitely closer now, I would say, yeah.
Was it now, because obviously you're now a Church of Ireland priest. Do you call yourself vicar, rector, priest? I spoke to Trevor Sargent recently about this. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. So I am a Church of Ireland priest, same as Graham. And so the priest would be the title, but rector is kind of the role. So I'm the rector in Rathmines and Harold's Cross. So a priest and serving God in that way. But rector is kind of the place that I work in the geographic area in that sort of local capacity.
Growing up, and that I'm going to bring you in a moment, Louise, growing up, were you conscious that you were Protestants? As a family, were you conscious you were slightly different than the masses of people in the Republic of Ireland?
Well, we had a very interesting road that we grew up in Rathfarnham, actually, which I don't think it was the norm in Dublin. There was actually a mix of Protestants and Catholics on that road. I think there was 3 Protestants and about 20 Catholics. So, yeah. But there was a mix. And I think we grew up in that understanding of having a mixture. But I definitely remember, I don't know about you, Graham, but remember, like, we didn't play Gaelic football. We didn't play hurling. There were certain things that you didn't do on Sundays. We played soccer. We played netball. And so the schooling kind of made that difference.
So, Louise, where did you and Graham meet?
We met in college. Yeah. So I used to go out with Graham's best friend.
Okay.
Yes, controversial.
He's forgiven you, Graham, I assume. Yeah, yes, that's fine.
And it was a couple of years after that we actually got together, but that is how we met. So that was through kind of UCD college days.
And interestingly, I suppose, when you marry Graham, he mm-hmm. went on to be a high-flying lawyer. What does it feel like now to be married to not a high-flying lawyer, but in fact, someone who's done a lot of good, but is actually a Church of Ireland pastor?
Yeah, I guess... For me, you know, you're setting off in life, family life, children, buying a house, and you're on a certain trajectory. And Graham has always had a heart. I think that's probably one of the things I absolutely fell in love with him for, was just his heart for others. We actually spent a bit of time going to Romania even before we got together, just volunteering at orphanages, and went back then together and actually got engaged there. So there was
outside a pigsty.
Outside a pigsty.
Very romantic.
Yes, very romantic. So there was just this sense of social justice in his heart, which I loved. So then we were on this trajectory of, you know, the typical lifestyle of job and kids and all of that. And I just knew, in the depths of Graham that law wasn't what he was called to. And, you know, yet we have a mortgage, we have children.
I think, though, the context leading up to that, though, was a growing frustration in me, in that I was doing a role and I was carrying out a job that wasn't fulfilling the purpose that I had been given. And so when people say to me, it must have been a brave move to leave law, going into the unknown where I didn't have a job, that wasn't brave. That was actually frustration, because I just wasn't doing what I believed God was calling me to do.
And what you did do is you left law to set up with others the Solace Project. Tell people about it, what it does.
At that stage, during sort of my legal career, I'd been doing a lot of voluntary work. And as part of that, a group of friends and I set up a rugby club in the inner city called Liberty Saints Rugby Football Club. And it was through that experience that I grew more and more aware of the disadvantage in the city. And that then led on to this growing frustration of wanting to be more involved in that side of life, and then leading to the decision for us to leave law, going into the unknown. And I suppose at the heart of Solace Project was to tackle social disadvantage, educational disadvantage and youth crime. And I'm so proud to be able to say that it's going from strength to strength even today. And I had the privilege of leading that organisation for about 6 years.
Which is a wonderful thing to have achieved, actually. Probably much better than being a lawyer, as I alienate every lawyer listening to me.
Well, I suppose for me, there's always trying to live by that sort of mantra of having no regrets. And there was definitely a growing sense of frustration, which was leading to a potential regret if I hadn't left law and pursued a heart's desire to try and do a little bit more for the people that needed help in whatever way we could. And it was just amazing to see how Solace Project grew with the support of so many different people from so many different areas of the city.
Rob, were you surprised at your brother? I mean, you're the person who went into the church. You made that choice initially. But were you surprised when he threw up a high-flying legal career to go and do something, first of all, like Solace, and then to become a priest also?
I have to admit, I wasn't surprised, because I remember from a young age, Graham having a faith and having a closeness to God, which I always saw in him. But I suppose, having gone through the process myself, I wouldn't say I was wary, but I remember having the conversation with Graham and said, you know, just think this through, you know, just make sure it's right, it's correct. I think that was more of a protective brother than anything. I wasn't surprised at all, but I was just, I suppose, caring in that it was the right thing, because it was an amazing career and he was doing so much.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think there was that mix of knowing he was going to do it. And
yeah, but it, I suppose there is also that point as well in the middle where, you know, working in a, as a commercial lawyer, you know, you're carrying out a certain role. But I did have an opportunity then to move across to become a criminal defence lawyer. And it was at that stage where I really thought both my sort of social conscience and my professional training were going to come together and merge in a way in which that fulfilment that I was looking for was going to be realised. But which ironically, that actually led to even more frustration, because I had this desire to be more available to the clients in a holistic way rather than just managing their file or their case. But unfortunately, the way any law firm is set up, it's there to make a profit, and therefore volume of clients is really important to be able to achieve that. But with that volume also meant a lack of time on each individual case. And it was really at that point where it became the tipping point into leading into throwing total abandonment out the door and jumping from law and seeing what we could do in regards to creating Solace Project.
With the great support of Louise beside you, when was the moment you decided, I'm also going to be a Church of Ireland priest?
Well, this is the really interesting bit, because...
And when did you tell Louise?
Louise and I have had many conversations where I've come home from work going, I think this is what we need to do now. And she's like, oh, what's this going to look like?
What's the next thing?
Exactly, yeah. At that stage of having experience being a criminal defence lawyer and seeing really on the inside what it was like for so many young men trapped in a system that they didn't really have much support to come away from. It was really that sense of wanting to do more. And I suppose at that stage, you and I really made that decision that we had to make a big leap of faith and that nothing was going to change unless we made that decision ourselves. And it was through then Louise's support that we did that.
In all honesty, I mean, he had suggested it here and there along the way.
Becoming a priest.
Little hints of, I just wonder, is that something I need to respond to? That, you know, again, just that sense of regret. Like, is this something I need to push into? And
but
I was like,
also,
no.
It was, I suppose, halfway through leading Solace Project that become a growing calling in order for it to be genuine. So that Graham Jones was separated from Solace Project, and therefore I wanted to try and fulfil the purpose that God had in my life through the calling towards being ordained and leave Solace Project to be a community development organisation where it was being true to its calling.
And actually, I watched a wonderful Would You Believe for this programme last night about your work in the Solace Project. But of course, Graham, into every life can come some darkness.
Yeah.
Tell me about your cancer diagnosis, if you don't mind.
One of the reasons I wanted that is to empathise with the thousands of people in this country who are going through cancer. And I don't think there's anybody in Ireland who hasn't been affected by it. Mm. And when we decided as a family, Louise and I, that I was going to leave Solace Project was probably in the middle of 2016. And there's a discernment process within the Church of Ireland that is quite extensive. And during that whole time, we were obviously working out what to do. I was given the privilege of being selected for ordination. And that then led to the decision to leave Solace Project and go full time towards training, which is a 3-year process. That kicked off about September 2016. And within a couple of months, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And I remember distinctly probably being given the first opportunity in my working career to be available at Christmas time for my children, because every other Christmas been busy working. And it was the 17th of December 2016, a phone call from the GP to say that a scan had shown up that there was the diagnosis there. So I was whipped up to Talla Hospital from the cooker, having trying to prepare the spaghetti bolognese with the children coming through the door. And I had an operation. I was taken. They did an amazing job, got me back home for Christmas Eve. Had Christmas with the family. That was obviously quite devastating, but at the same time, it was a beautiful time. Mm-hmm. We celebrated Christmas, and then unfortunately the cancer had spread. So I had to go forward for chemotherapy into 2017. That was successful to the point where the blood counts had shown that, you know, the treatment had been effective. And then unfortunately, later on that year, the blood counts showed that the cancer had come back. I was experiencing a huge amount of pain in the October of 2017. And that diagnosis then led to show that the cancer had actually manifested itself on my spine and also in one of my lungs. So the treatment then that was suggested was high-dose chemotherapy and stem cell transfer, which meant I had to go into hospital for effectively 4 months in isolation between Talla and James's. And that led us to getting the dates right, probably March 2018. Again, that was a success. Blood counts were down. There was a real moment of celebration. And at the same time, a slight bit of guilt on my part because so many people don't get that news, where I'd been given brilliant news. And we then continued to live life. And then over the course of the next few months, the blood counts started to rise again. And the doctors couldn't quite work out why that was happening, because my scans were showing all these positive results in regards to there was no indication of cancer, but the blood counts were going up. And that then eventually, through a process of elimination, showed that there was a lesion on my brain. And that then was dealt with by what's called stereotactic radiation. And that was successful in itself, but in the follow-up scan, it showed that more lesions had come back on my brain. And that was the most alarming part for the doctors, because they had come back so quickly. So I had a lumbar puncture to sort of understand more as to why that was happening. And it was found that my central nervous system had become contaminated with cancer, and that's why the lesions were coming back so quickly, which led then only about a month ago to a very traumatic event where, unfortunately, Louise had to, you know, that Hollywood moment of wheeling me down a corridor of a hospital saying, can somebody please help my husband? Because I was beginning to I couldn't stand up. I was losing the power of my words, and they had to pump me with steroids to try and just stabilise the situation. And it's now got to the stage where it is to the point that I'm no longer receiving treatment, and we're now just managing symptoms in regards to quality of life.
And I'm looking at you and you look so healthy. I know that sounds counterintuitive or something, but you do, Graham. And yet you're not.
No, I'm not. And that's very real. And I take great comfort from the fact that you tell me that I look well, even though that's frustrating because you know, it doesn't seem to match. And I, without sounding in any way pious or over-religious, I just feel a sense of joy and peace. And maybe that's what you're seeing. Because, you know, God says that peace, his peace will transcend human understanding. And I just have that real sense of joy and that real sense of peace.
And that is your faith, obviously, because I assume other people who don't have as strong a faith as you facing their mortality would find it more difficult. In other words, maybe is it your faith, you think, that's really helping you at this moment, Graham?
Well, I firmly believe it is. And I say that, though, reluctantly, because I don't want anyone to feel bad about them not dealing with it well. Because I don't feel like I'm doing anything in my own strength. And I suppose one of the things that does really frustrate me when I hear people's language is when they say people talking about battling cancer. And I find that actually very offensive, because people can't battle cancer on their own because it's outside their control. And then when you hear language like, oh, somebody lost their battle to cancer, that nearly puts blame on that person or pressure on that person. And for me, if there's a message to anybody who's trying to support somebody going through cancer, is to stop using that language, you know, and just take the pressure off the person to say it's actually not within your control, and just to try and live every day as best you can and finding the joy in every moment. And I suppose within that, I've been asking my friends a question: what is a flourishing life, Miriam? And it's been so interesting just to hear the response from people in them experiencing my suffering. And I think I would hope that that's bringing out more in them in understanding the joy of life and the gift of life. And I can honestly say that in the midst of all that we are experiencing, I, in the last 2 or 3 years, like between myself and Louise in particular, in our own marriage, I've never experienced such intimacy that I would have thought was possible in such a time of suffering.
But you are a remarkable person. I'm not sure most people would face their mortality so remarkably. For you, Louise, obviously he is a remarkable person, but how have you dealt with it? And you've three very young daughters.
Yeah, we've three girls. Rebecca's 13, Amelia is 11, and Romy is 10. And I think from the get-go, we just brought them on the journey with us, and we didn't try and hide anything, and we have always said that we will be honest with you. I think in that, they're, you know, us trusting them that they are strong enough to come on the journey with us has just empowered them to encourage, to care for Graham. It's just, it's beautiful. And I suppose we've just done it as a family, and obviously Graham's extended family. I mean, it has just been overwhelming. I suppose the phrase that I'm using, you know, when people say, dare I ask how you are, or how things are, I say it's devastatingly beautiful. And in the midst of the most heartbreaking, devastating time, there is just this unbelievable beauty and joy and just intimacy, as Graham says, and closeness in relationships and strengthening. And I suppose just in terms of, you know, the world's view of this being loss, anxiety, sadness, I just have this sense of like this is a launch pad, you know, that everything that we have journeyed, everything we have built, it's a platform to launch all of the rest of our lives from. And so just the phrase I keep coming back to is it's just all worth it. So obviously I, as I said, I'm heartbroken with the diagnosis, but just what we have, what we've experienced, where we've journeyed and weaved our lives in and out of, and just the family that we have, it's just all worth it.
I assume Rob as well, as his brother and as a Church of Ireland pastor, you give him probably a lot of pastoral support, but his courage, I assume, and his attitude to a terminal diagnosis carries you all as well, does it?
It definitely does, and I'm just so proud of him. You know, Graham's a best friend. He's a brother. He's also a colleague. And I'm just so proud of him and Louise. And we're in this season of Advent and this idea of light coming in darkness and the building light as the day grows less. And I really see it in Graham. I just see the light growing, which is counterintuitive, as you say. And in the midst of darkness, there's great light. And so he definitely is carrying. And I believe that's also God's spirit in just in the midst of this devastating situation, that great hope.
So does it, in a sense, take away the fear of dying? As I say, you look great, but you are actually very ill and you are terminally ill. So does it take away the fear of dying, your faith? And do you think we go to heaven? I always ask people that question because I'm particularly interested in your answer.
Yeah, well, I know as a Christian, I am going to heaven. So I have absolutely no fear in regards to where I'm going. Where the devastation comes is who I'm leaving behind. You know, and in terms of, you know, the loss of that.
How old are you, Graham?
42.
Wow. Very young. Do you have a bucket list, by the way, or is that a really stupid question? Are you spending all the time you have now just doing ordinary things at home with your family, or do you have things, Louise, you want to do together?
Yeah, I think literally since this diagnosis has come, it's given us a perspective. You know, we have savoured every step of the journey. Yeah. We've always, you know, one of our greatest tools, you know, to create a way through any difficult times is thankfulness. We always look for the gold in everybody and everything. And amazing to get to this point to go that there's nothing we need to catch up on. We've always spoken out how we feel, you know, our love for the girls. And actually, there's obviously things that we would love to do, but there's that sense of peace that, you know,
It's hard to put into words because it does transcend human understanding. Yeah. I don't want that to ever sound like it's a sort of a magic wand, because there is real suffering, there is real pain, there are real tears, there's like just heartbrokenness. Mm. But yet, in some way, God will allow the joy to come through because of trusting in him. And the phrase that we would often say to ourselves and to our kids is, we are safe. We are safe in his arms.
Well, Graham, it's been a privilege for me to meet you and a joy. I wish you the very best to your beautiful wife, Louise, and your wonderful brother, Rob. Thanks for taking the time in your life at the moment to come and talk to us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, absolute Thanks privilege. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tweet at Miriam O'Cal. Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
And our text number is 51551. You can find us on Twitter at Miriam O'Cal. Well, there's been a veritable avalanche of reaction, I'm not surprised, to Graham Jones there. I'm just going to bring you a few of them. Miriam, such a thought-provoking and amazing interview. What an amazing couple and your guests are. I'm wishing them all lots of peace. Thank you for their honesty. That's from Julie. Another says, Martina says, Miriam, so sad for Graham and his family, especially at Christmas time. Such wonderful faith to help carry them through. Anne-Marie O'Farrell says, love and best wishes to your wonderful guests, Graham, Louise and Rob, and thanks to them for their witness to faith and their adversity. Another says, powerful and inspiring conversation with Graham Jones this morning. What remarkable people living authentically their own lives, which is absolutely wonderful. Another, Miriam, sometimes you get disillusioned by other fellow Irish people in the state of the country, but listen, listening to Graham this morning, I feel so proud to have him as a fellow Irishman. And I'll just bring you one more. Anne says, Miriam, Graham's approach to his life and impending demise is the most edifying item I have heard possibly ever. He is now in my heart and prayers. That's from Anne. And another says, it reminds me, Miriam, of my husband treating his cancer in such a courageous way. I will include Graham in my prayers and masses and pray for a miracle. That's from Joan. Well, look, we'll move on. During the week, as many of you will know, after almost 32 years together, the Pogues frontman Shane McGann finally got married to his partner, Victoria Mary Clark. They got married in Copenhagen. The beautiful bride wore red. And among the guests was actor Johnny Depp, a close friend of the couple for years. Well, almost exactly this time last year, I went around to their home in Dublin to speak to both of them. Last year was about their life, their relationship, and of course his musical genius. So last Thursday, after hearing the great news of their marriage, I went back around to hear about their special day. Congratulations, Victoria and Shane. Victoria, you got married in Copenhagen.
Yes, Copenhagen.
Tell me about it. How it came about.
Well, Copenhagen is very lovely at this time of year because it's like they have this huge Christmas.
It's falling, freezing.
It's freezing. It is freezing. And they have like fake snow and Christmas trees and snowmen. And they have an amusement arcade. No, what you call it, a fun fair. It's like the oldest fun fair in the world.
They got mulled wine. They have mulled wine. Glue wine, as they call it.
Yeah, glug wine.
Glug.
Yeah.
Glug, yeah.
Which is gorgeous.
So why did you choose Copenhagen, both of you?
You chose it.
I chose it because I thought it would be very beautiful, but also somewhere where we wouldn't be known, nobody would know us. But like, Johnny Depp was there, so that meant like there was a whole lot of paparazzi who turned up following him. So they did end up like getting loads of pictures and finding where it was. But it was meant to be secret.
Did you just?
I've been there loads of times. I've played there loads of times.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Did Victoria just turn to you and say, "Let's get married"?
I can't remember.
Okay, Victoria, what happened?
I think I probably did. Did I?
I don't know.
I may have suggested it would be a good idea, like, because there was a bit of an anticlimax after the birthday concert, and everyone was like, oh, now we need something else.
What are we going to do now?
That was in January. So I figured if we got married, that would be
We've
nice.
Been living together for
a long time.
Apart from a few nasty little splits, you know what I mean? Like, for the best part, 30 years or more.
More?
Yeah.
So it looks like we're not going anywhere.
Because it was important to both of you that you do it somewhere privately, wasn't it? Because you are both very private people.
I suppose we just wanted as little fuss as possible and, you know, not to be overwhelmed and to keep it, I suppose, a bit intimate so that we would focus on what we were actually doing rather than on, you know, a load of people. Because it's a different thing.
Got linked to the television news and the papers.
I think we do know how it got linked, don't we?
What? Sinead?
We don't say. I did tell someone who I shouldn't have told.
Yeah.
Who kind of did tell people. But, you know, that's inevitable and we were already there and it was already going ahead and so it's fine. It worked out fine.
You look beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Miriam.
Yeah.
You always look beautiful. It's a nice thing.
She looks beautiful, whatever she's wearing.
Thank you, Shane.
I think she looks beautiful in that outfit.
Yeah, she does look beautiful.
I should say where the dress came from. That's important. So the dress is from Bella Freud, and she's an old friend of ours. And she did, last year she did a Christmas jumper, like a Fairy Tale of New York Christmas jumper, and a candle as well. And so it was great to have her dress. It's just really nice.
Did you just look up her website? Because she's a friend of yours and say, I want a lovely dress.
I was trying to think what I could wear that would be nice. So I was looking at her website and I saw the red dress and I was like, wow, that would work. So I rang her and said, you know, have you got that in my size? And she said, yes. So she sent it over. Which was very handy because it meant I didn't have to go looking.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And also, you didn't invite too many people.
No.
I know Shane's dad and sister couldn't go because your dad wasn't well. Isn't that right? But he's getting better, Shane.
Yes, he is better. And it's just they got a test on him.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, which is great news that he's getting better. But your family was there and your dad made a speech, Victoria.
Yeah, he did. And he only got married to my mother like a couple of years ago. So I think he felt it was nice to be suddenly in a sort of paternal role officially and be the father-in-law. And he likes making speeches because he's an actor. So I think he had like a 10-page speech he was going to do, but then he cut it down to like 2 pages. Because we asked everyone to make speeches. So everyone who was there made a speech, except me. I couldn't talk because I got laryngitis. And he didn't either.
Which is nice. So how many people roughly were there?
I think there was like 20 in total.
Tell me about your wedding cake.
Well, like, we hadn't thought of things like a wedding cake or flowers or any of those things. But my sister Jenny Rose is very, she's a lovely, lovely person, and she just was determined to make it special somehow. So she got a beautiful cake with a little man and a little lady on top. And she made these flower crown things for us to wear. And it's just so, like, I think it's great for when your family can demonstrate, you know, because I think we all feel that we love our families, but sometimes we don't know how to demonstrate or how to say it, and it can be expressed in gestures like that. So it felt like real, a lot of love. And there was a girl, a friend of ours, who came all the way from Thailand just for the one day and went back again.
That's a really good friend.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? We should probably mention Johnny Depp as well, because he, you know, went to a lot of trouble to be there for us. And, you know, it's not that easy for him to go places because he gets a lot of hassle, he gets people following him. It's always like he can't really go anywhere without it being reported. So it was quite a big deal for him to
go there,
to be there. And yeah, it was really nice. And he went to, like, you know, it was great to have him.
Remind people who don't know how you both know him.
I suppose we've known him for a very long time, like maybe more than 20 years.
Much more
than 20 years. I think we met him when he was interested in playing the role of Jerry Conlon in the film.
Yeah.
And he came to Ireland to, in fact, it was in London that we first met him, but he just came over to, like, hang out with Jerry and get a feel for the role, and that's how we met him. So he's like a very lovely, gentle soul, a really beautiful person.
I've been loving you a long time, down all the years, down all the days, and I've cried for all your troubles, smile at your funny little ways. We watched our friends grow up together, and we saw them as they fell. Some of them fell into heaven, some of them fell into hell. I took shelter from a shower, and I stepped in to your arms on a rainy night in Soho. The wind was whistling all its charm. I sang you all my sorrows, you told me all your joys. Whatever happened to that old song, to all those little girls and boys?
And is it true that Shane stopped Johnny Depp singing at one stage?
No.
Well, no, it was Johnny Cronin you stopped, wasn't it?
I didn't stop anybody.
You remember they started singing Rainy Night in Soho and you said, stop that.
Oh, they were singing Rainy Night in Soho. Yeah, I always stopped people doing that.
Why?
Because I'm sick to death of it, yeah.
But that's your favourite song.
It is my favourite song. It is. So I did want them to do it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it was a bit mean, really.
What annoys me about Rainy Night in Soho is people just concentrate on that and Fairy Tale of New York. And I've written hundreds of songs, you know, and I like them all, you know.
So you think the other ones should get some attention?
Well, they do, from real fans, you know.
So of all the others, if we were to choose to play another Pogue song this morning, or another song you have written, give me one to play that you would like to hear and like people to listen to this morning.
Victoria.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice, isn't it?
Well, we'll do that.
Okay.
Down a dirty old street, the angel of the east is calling, and with a trembling hand I open up a can. I can hear a baby bawling. Before I open up my eyes, I can feel the warmth inside me. But then I realize my girl with green eyes is no longer there beside me. Victoria, left me in opium for you. When a fat man sings Gloria, my girl with green eyes.
But anyway, they did Astral Weeks, which was really good.
Why do you both, you both love Astral Weeks,
yes,
don't
you? Yes.
We do, very much.
Yeah.
It's not easy to put into words, but it's more of a feeling. Like when I hear it, I feel myself get lifted, and I feel my heart open, and I feel joy, and I feel it's like you know, it's like being raised up. It's like proper old-fashioned church music, or, you know, that just makes you feel there is a God.
Shane is a musical genius, which I know you can't stand people saying to you. Why do you like Astral Weeks?
Why shouldn't I like Astral Weeks? It's brilliant, you know.
What do you love about it?
Well, I love the tune, I love the words, I love the instrumentation, I love the arrangement. I really like Van Morrison anyway, yeah, but I think it's one of his hot, real high points, the whole album actually, but the title track is, it's a great opening track, you know what I mean?
If I ventured in the slipstream between the viaducts of your dream, where mobile steel rims crack and the ditch and the back road stop, could you find me? Or would you kiss my eyes? Laying you down, the silence is like to be born again, to be born again. From the far side of the ocean, if I put the wheels in motion, then I stand with my arms behind me. I'm pushing out the door. Could you find me? Would you kiss my eyes? Lay me down. In silence easy to be born again. To be born again.
Do you feel different now that you're Mrs. McGowan?
No, I don't feel any different. But also, I wouldn't take someone else's name. I wouldn't be Mrs. McGowan.
Hmm.
I would say, like, if Shane wants to be Mr. Clark, that's kind of cool. But if not, that's fine. He doesn't want to be Mr. Clark. But I certainly want to stay Victoria Clark.
Do you feel different married? Does it make it simpler to say, this is my husband as opposed to this is my partner? Or does it make no difference, really?
I don't think it makes any difference, really. You know, like, because I think in the old days, being a wife or a husband was sort of like being the property. You know what I mean? Like, in fact, I'm sure that being a wife was like being property. But I think these days it's not like that. And you're not each other's property. So you're still partners. I think partner is probably a better word.
Do you feel different being married, Shane?
Yes, I do.
Do you?
I feel different.
How do you feel different?
I don't know. I feel very up about it. You know?
You feel good about it?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
In a secure kind of way, or?
No, I'm excited about it, you know. It's exciting.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow, and what's it like? Like, you know, you don't really sound excited.
I don't mean excited like a football match or something. I mean, I didn't expect to feel different, but I do, you know.
Is that a good thing?
Yes, you've got to move on in life, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You took your time to get married, though, Shane.
Well, it takes two to get married, yeah.
That is true, it does take two.
Did you not want to get married before?
Well, I think I did at some times, and then at other times I wasn't sure if I did or not. And I always wanted to see if I could, like, establish myself. Because, like, you know, if you marry someone who's famous, it's very easy to then become just a shadow of that person. So I think I wanted to make my own way and make my own name and not become just the wife of somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, to have something that is mine and isn't. If that makes sense.
I love the story of your ring, your wedding ring.
It's a Barmbrack ring. I was eating the Barmbrack at Halloween and the ring, I ate it. And I was like, oh, okay, now we have a ring.
Which is a lovely story because neither of you, and for my listeners, because I'm sitting in your apartment in Dublin, neither of you are obviously materialistic at all.
Well, you know, I think we would be if you weren't so lazy. No, we would be if you weren't so lazy. But I think we're just too lazy to make that much of an effort, you know.
He says he thinks you are both materialistic. In what way? I can't see any trappings of materialism, Shane McGann. He's looking around the room.
Something.
I mean, there's a television, there's loads of books. There's a beautiful picture of Jesus. There's DVDs. But compared to a lot of people who would have had your success.
Yeah.
No, but you know what I mean? You're not interested
not
in... He's not flash.
Not flash.
Neither of you are.
No. I suppose that's true. I suppose there isn't, you know, it's just not, like... We've been around people with a lot of money and it isn't necessarily making them happier. I don't know. I mean, obviously you need a certain amount of money to live, but beyond that, maybe there's other things that are more important, you know, like friendship or love or health is important, way more important.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you do the traditional vows on your wedding day? What did you say to each other?
I think she said that the lady who was doing the service said things like, make sure you listen to each other, make sure you laugh together, make sure you support each other. But they weren't going to make us, like, vow that we were going to do that. It was just, mm-hmm. It was quite informal and very human, I think, really human. And not, like, over the top, you know, not like, I'm going to promise you the earth forever and ever until you die.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. But you're a real couple in a sense, because as Shane said earlier, you've been together for almost 32 years actually.
Yeah.
You've got married, but that's a real commitment because you know each other so well. You've been through so much together, good and bad, ups and downs. It's almost a sense that's a real commitment.
Well, we've seen the bad, haven't we? Seen the really bad?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, good. It's like you want to get to know someone, don't you? Before you commit to them. Because if you've just met them, you could see them with really rosy glasses and not have any idea what you're letting yourself in for. Happens a lot, I think.
Did you enjoy the day itself?
Yeah, had a great day. I wasn't expecting to. My niece, Rosa, came in to get me out of bed and she was like, how are you? And I was like, oh God, I hate that. I just want to get through it. It's going to be awful. And she's a very good life coach. So she was like, you'll do it. You'll get through it. I think I was kind of nervous about, you know, doing something, even in front of 20 close people, it's still a public thing. Mm-hmm. It's still, you know, revealing and emotional.
Were you nervous, Shane, before you got married?
Yes, I was a bit nervous, yeah.
Why?
Why wouldn't I be, you know?
Did you think when you first met him all those years ago, Victoria, that you would still be together all these years on, or not? Were there moments when you thought, no, you wouldn't be?
I think when I first met him, when we first got together, I was determined that this was the one. There was not going to be anyone else. This was the person I was going to be with, definitely. But, I mean, obviously there were times during those years that it was hard, like really hard, and I would have hated him. But I think, like, I still loved him and hated him at the same time. What do you think?
Yeah, I just loved you all the time. Yeah.
You never hated me?
No.
Oh, that's nice.
It's great that you are so caring and nice to Victoria, because not all relationships are like that.
Well, then they're not worth anything, you know.
Hmm. That is true.
Yeah. We're coming towards the end now, Shane. I know you told me before, Shane, you're quite religious or spiritual. Do you think you like being married now because you're quite a religious and spiritual person or not?
No, it's just a good feeling.
Do you think if your mom was around, she'd be happy that you've got married?
Of course she would, yeah. I'm sorry she didn't live to see it. There you go.
I felt her presence on the day, in the morning.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I definitely did. Yeah, I felt she was encouraging and supporting.
That's really lovely.
Yeah.
Did you say a prayer on the day, Shane?
No.
I didn't say a prayer. I wasn't really thinking like that. I did ask the angels, though, to make it, like, to make it easy and make it lovely and make it special, and they did.
Did you party into the early hours?
We did. You see, we had our party the night before, which was kind of a strange way of doing it, but we actually had the party the night before. And then we had to get up all hungover and go and do the wedding and then have another party. So that the party lasted all the next day as well.
Finally, if you found people are really happy for you since you came home, or is everyone saying, so happy you got married?
Yeah, people are really, like, overwhelmingly into it. Yeah. It's very surprising. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't expect there to be any notice paid at all. So it was really lovely and surprising.
Yeah. I think it's a measure of how much the affection people feel for you and Shane that you did get married.
That's so nice.
Congratulations to you both, and thank you once again for allowing me into your home.
Thank you, Miriam. You're always welcome here. You can come here anytime.
I'll be back next week.
Can't you, Shane?
Yeah.
Anytime at all.
Thanks, Victoria. Thank you.
Cheers, Miriam.
And actually, thanks again to Shane and Victoria. They're such a nice couple. When you go into their apartment, they're so welcoming. And I think our text feed here is full of people wishing them both well. So again, congratulations to Shane and Victoria. Also, our text feed is full of people in praise for Graham Jones and his remarkable story earlier, talking to us in the face of his terminal diagnosis. I know he can't stand it himself at this stage, Fairy Tale of New York, but we love it, so we're going to go out on it. Sorry about that, Shane. My thanks today to Ruth Kennington on sound, our producer Shannon Gorman, BCO Andrew Duprayer. The winner of our competition was Anne Clark from Banahern County, Offaly. Sloan, see you next Sunday.